We are going to discuss compensating the wrongfully convicted this hour, people who spend time in prison for crimes they did not commit. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, February 3rd. Our conversation is prompted by a recent article in the Chicago Tribune about the difficulties facing people who were wrongfully imprisoned. And our guest law professor says states like Illinois that do not have a compensation statute must pass one. And states like Wisconsin, which does compensate those who were wrongfully imprisoned but caps that compensation at $25,000 total, need to re-examine their laws to make sure that compensation is adequate and attainable. And we will wonder if you agree or not and what questions you have. What does a state owe someone who has been imprisoned for a crime that he or she did not commit? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ilya Soman, a professor of law at George Mason University. He wrote a recent piece that appeared in the Chicago Tribune making the case for compensating people who serve time in prison unjustly. He is also the author of Democracy and Political Ignorance, Why Smaller Government is Smarter. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. So make that case for us. Why do you think wrongfully convicted or imprisoned people should be compensated?
Well, I think the case is fairly simple. If the government either deliberately or inadvertently imprisons an innocent person, destroying years of their lives, often inflicting all kinds of both psychological and physical pain, basic fairness and justice suggest that we should compensate that person, and we should compensate them in a way that's at least somewhat proportional to the true harm that they suffered. So you mentioned the Wisconsin statute. I doubt very many people would be willing to spend even a few months in prison in exchange for $25,000, much less many years.
Yeah, that I have to admit, I was surprised to read that so many states don't compensate at all. Give us an idea of what the country looks like in terms of these statutes.
Sure. There's about 21 states that don't offer any compensation. Of the remaining 29, there's a good many that do have some compensation and offer very little. For people who are convicted in the federal prison system, there can be compensation. If I recall correctly, it's capped at something like $50,000 or maybe a little bit higher than that. So the federal system is moderately generous, but many state systems either offer nothing at all or very little.
Well, talk some about why a state that inadvertently, let's say there have been cases in Wisconsin, for example, where an eyewitness said, that's the man who raped me, or whatever the case may be, and a jury of peers convicted that person. Why should the state have to compensate that person if it turns out with DNA evidence years later that that conviction was wrong?
So the case for compensation is perhaps at its strongest where the state has either deliberately or through serious negligence convicted an innocent person. But even if the state does so through an entirely innocent and understandable error, I think compensation is still owed because the fact remains that this person has in effect become a victim of the criminal justice system. It may be unavoidable if we have such a system at all, but if the situation arises that this person is in effect bearing the costs of criminal justice system that benefits everybody, then I think it's unfair and unjust to force him or her to bear those costs by himself. To the extent that the system benefits all of society, then society as a whole should pay in much the same way as if society decides to condemn your property for some public project like a road or a bridge. The Constitution says that they have to compensate you for the market value of your property. They can't just say, well, the road or bridge is beneficial, so we'll just take away your land and you get nothing. And obviously, if that applies to property, it should apply even more strongly to an innocent person's freedom.
How big of a problem is this, specifically the cases where a state deliberately or through some sort of negligence or actually, I guess it would be even criminal to convict someone or push for a conviction of someone who is clearly innocent.
How big a problem it is disputed by experts who go over to statistics, but it's at the very least probably a bigger problem than many people think. In particular, writers and journalists such as Radley Balco has written a whole series of articles about this, find that in quite a few jurisdictions there's lots of evidence of misconduct by government forensics experts, the police, and sometimes other officials where evidence is misconstrued or abused in various ways, either negligently or sometimes deliberately. This happens for various reasons, but one reason is that in many jurisdictions, prosecutors and other officials are assessed based on their conviction rates, and this gives them some incentive to be unscrupulous about the ways that they get convictions. In addition, in many cases, even when misconduct is discovered, the sanctions for it are extremely weak, and it's very rare for a prosecutor to be disciplined or punished after the fact when an exoneration occurs. So the incentives to avoid misconduct are often weak. So it's disputed exactly how often it occurs, but obviously for every case where we find out that it occurs, there's a good chance there are others where we never find out, in part because once somebody is convicted and is imprisoned, many of these people don't really have much in the way of resources to keep investigating their cases or turning up new evidence or looking into possible official misconduct.
So what do you think a state owes someone who has been imprisoned for a crime that he or she did not commit?
So reasonable people can differ about exactly how to calculate it, but at the very least, the person should be compensated for their foregone income over that time, plus some additional amount for pain and suffering. In addition, many people who are imprisoned are victims of violence or other kinds of abuse in prisons. In some states, prison rape, for instance, is tragically common. So we're talking, I think at the very least, a reasonable amount might be $50,000 to $100,000 per year. I would actually argue in many cases it should be more than that. But at the very least, I think reasonable people can agree that something like Wisconsin statute or some other states where it's capped at $20,000 or $25,000 total, that's probably not enough to compensate somebody even for 1 year in prison, much less several.
We are talking about compensating the wrongfully convicted this hour. And wonder what you think. How much do you think a state should pay someone who has been imprisoned for a crime that he or she did not commit? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. As mentioned, Wisconsin does have a law on the books that does compensate those who are wrongfully imprisoned, but caps that compensation at $25,000 total. Should it really be $25,000 or more per year of wrongful imprisonment? What about states that don't have one of these statutes at all? Should all states have a compensation statute? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. And where should that money come from? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's just about 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, February 3rd. We are talking about compensating the wrongly convicted. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest law professor, who says that states must pass laws that provide for the compensation of the wrongfully convicted or imprisoned. And states who have these laws on the books need to evaluate them to make sure that compensation is enough. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have. Our guest is Ilya Soman, a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law, the author of Democracy and Political Ignorance, Why Smaller Government is Smarter. And he's also the author of a piece that appeared recently in the Chicago Tribune, making the case for compensating people who serve time in prison unjustly. And before we go to the phones, Professor Soman, why did you become interested in this issue enough so to write a piece about it?
Yeah. So actually, very small correction, I actually wrote the piece in the Volt Conspiracy blog, which is affiliated with the Washington Post. As to why I wrote a piece about it, it happened partly by accident, partly not. For a number of years, I've been interested in issues related to the war on drugs, and I came across, as a result of this article that appeared in the Chicago Tribune last week, which focused on the difficulties people in Illinois have in getting exonerated. And as I was reading that piece, it occurred to me to wonder, well, if you do get exonerated, do you get compensated for it? And if so, at what rate? And so I looked up various academic research on the subject, and I was not surprised that compensation is low in many states, but I was actually surprised how many states there are which don't compensate people at all, though perhaps I shouldn't have been, given that most of the people in question are people with very little political influence. And in addition, having written about a book about political ignorance, I know that this is one of the types of issues that the vast majority of the electorate is probably unaware of.
Yeah, my mistake. I just had the original article in the Chicago Tribune on my mind, I guess.
No problem.
Let's go to the phones. Brian in Beloit is with us first. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Joy. I look forward to my ride every morning so I can listen to your show.
Well, thank you.
Say, I can't see why they shouldn't pay someone based on their income that they were making before they were incarcerated, adjusted for inflation, or even the average income of an individual in the U.S., whichever is greater. Especially why should they take some kind of a cut while they've been wrongfully convicted?
Right. Well, but it does come to mind, Professor Soman, that someone who is wrongfully convicted, I don't know, maybe in many cases, probably doesn't have a very high income at the time.
So that's true. Most people who are convicted for any sort of a crime have, on average, very low levels of income. In my view, though, the compensation should include not just compensation for lost income, but at least some additional compensation. Think about the suffering that you yourself might endure if you had to live in prison for the next 5 years, 10 years, or whatever, even if during that time you were still making the same income as you're making currently. I think very few people would accept that sort of an offer without getting some kind of large additional payment. I think loss of freedom, even if it doesn't lead to any loss of income, is itself a pretty significant harm and one that also should require some additional compensation. You can argue about exactly how much, and there are probably different ways to calculate it, but at the very least, it should be an amount significantly greater than zero.
Thank you, Brian, for the call. Here's an idea, Professor Soman. Tell us what you think of this. Peter writes on Facebook, if you took the money from the salaries of the prosecutors, it might be enough to reduce the number of wrongful convictions. For the person wrongly convicted, no amount is enough, but a starting point can be found by estimating lost wages. But what about taking it from the salaries of the prosecutors?
There may be some merit to the idea because it would deter, or at least it would help to deter, wrongful convictions in the first place. The problem, however, is twofold. One is, if that's the policy you would adopt, it would lead prosecutors and other officials to fight much harder even than they already do to prevent people from ever being exonerated, because obviously if they are exonerated, the prosecutor loses money, and that may make it even more difficult than it already is to get exonerations in the first place. secondly, as we discussed earlier, there are some cases where the prosecutor actually hasn't done anything wrong, where he or she did the best they could based on the information available at the time of the trial. So if you were going to, in effect, penalize the prosecutor, I would want to do so only in cases where we have evidence either that the prosecutor deliberately engaged in some misconduct or at the very least that they were negligent. And I, again, even in those cases, in some instances, I would worry about the state's incentives to continue resisting exoneration, which might be increased in a situation where the prosecutor would personally suffer, though I certainly share your desire to impose some accountability on prosecutors who do engage in misconduct in these cases.
Our next caller is Rochelle in Oconomowoc. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Great topic.
Well, thanks for calling, Rochelle. What do you think about this issue of compensating people who are wrongfully convicted or imprisoned?
Yeah, just a couple of thoughts. I was thinking maybe some sort of money going towards some programs for reintroducing to regular society. Depending on how long they've been in prison, they might, you know, they haven't been working, they don't have housing, they are looking for jobs, insurance, and all those things. So some sort of classes I know they do for the military, something similar for them perhaps. And then also definitely $25,000 is reasonable for some people, but for others who have been victims of corruption or misconduct, then that they can prove, then definitely a lot more compensation should probably be given to them.
Thank you, Rochelle. Well, what about programs to help people be reintroduced into society?
So perhaps there are different ways of compensating people other than giving them cash payments, but in general, I'd rather allow the exonerated person, him or herself, to be able to determine how the money is going to be spent rather than it be funneled through a government bureaucracy, because many reentry programs and other services of this kind, there's a lot of bureaucratic inefficiency there. Often they don't necessarily work very well. And in addition, I think there's a moral question where if you're owed compensation to that particular individual, if he or she is the one who's been wrong, then it seems to me that they should be the ones who decide how their compensation payment should be spent rather than the government or some bureaucracy.
Yeah. I think Rochelle was also hinting that if there was not any misconduct, that $25,000 seemed adequate, but it should be way more if there was misconduct.
I'm not convinced that $25,000 is anywhere near sufficient, even if there wasn't any misconduct, because the purpose of the compensation is not primarily to harm or blame a particular individual who's responsible for the innocent person being in prison. It's to compensate the innocent person themselves for the harm that they have suffered, irrespective of whether there's a particular individual who is to be blamed. As I noted earlier, we compensate people when the government takes away their property for a public project, even if the government had a perfectly good reason for taking it, and even if the project was entirely defensible. And similarly, innocent people who get convicted in a situation where there is no misconduct, they are still victimized by the criminal justice system, even if the victimization can't be blamed on bad deeds by any particular individual.
Seems to me that the original article in the Chicago Tribune that was detailing the problems that the wrongfully imprisoned were facing, it did include no help in being reintroduced into society. That I believe the article said that people who were guilty and upon the release of serving their time get more help than the innocent.
So I would have to go back and look at the original article. I don't have it in front of me right now. But it is true that in general, people who are released from prison get, in most states, only a small amount of government assistance or very little. And obviously in states where there's no special payments for people who are exonerated, they end up getting the same arrangements that everybody else who's released from prison get, which usually means that they get very little. You can argue that this is justified in a case where the person really did commit the crimes. In a sense, the adjustment problems they suffer later can be blamed on them. But if you're an innocent person, then it seems extremely unjust that you get nothing or almost nothing upon release.
Well, you'd probably be happy to know that in Wisconsin, at least late last fall, two state representatives, one Democrat and one Republican, were planning to introduce a bill that would reexamine the amount of money that a wrongfully convicted Wisconsin prisoner or person would get. It hasn't gone anywhere yet, but that's what you want. You want a state like Wisconsin that has this on the books to reexamine it.
Yeah, I think more attention on this issue is a good thing. And as I said, there may not be any perfect way to calculate exactly how much people should get. Even experts probably can't account for all the possible losses that people have suffered, but it seems to me clear that an amount like $25,000 is way too small for all but the very shortest imprisonment periods for people who are innocent.
We are talking with Ilya Soman, a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law, author of Democracy and Political Ignorance, Why Smaller Government is Smarter, talking about compensating the wrongfully convicted and welcoming your questions and your views on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest law professor who says states must adequately compensate those who are punished for crimes they did not commit. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, February 3rd. States are grappling with this question in the face of convictions being overturned due to DNA evidence or other circumstances. Our guest says that states that do not have compensation statutes on the books, and there are 29 of them, must pass them. And states that have them, like Wisconsin, should re-examine them to ensure that the compensation is adequate and attainable. Wisconsin currently caps total compensation for a wrongly convicted person at $25,000 total. Our guest says it should be $25,000 or $50,000 or more per year of wrongful conviction or imprisonment. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Ilya Soman, a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law, also author of Democracy and Political Ignorance, Why Smaller Government is Smarter. And our next caller is John in Johnson Creek. Hello, John.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I agree with the professor that every state should have a guarantee on a wrongful conviction, some monetary compensation. But there's things that are not being looked at here. Unfortunately, as a youth, I committed some crimes and I got time that I got sentenced and I deserved some time, but I got way over sentenced from a state down south. In that time, I learned, and if the states take a nonviolent criminal and will place them purposely in cells or in dorms with violent criminals. So then when you come out, you've got mistrust of authority. You've got post-traumatic stress disorders. You've got all kinds of mental, ailments going on that make it so that it's very hard to fit back into society. And for somebody to go through this who did nothing is a crime. Yeah. It should be compensated. I think personally that, like one of your callers had said before, that there needs to be some programs set up, and they need to be set up by the federal government, not by individual states. Because the states have a way of, there's the money's not there, and they cut the corners. This is a serious issue, and these people coming out of prison. I mean, look at the revocation rate on a probation person coming out into probation. It's because they have mental defects due to the stresses that they've gone through.
John, thank you very much for the call. And I'm sorry for what you had to go through. And thank you for the courage for calling in. So, Professor Soman, a number of different points here. John says he was convicted and rightfully needed to spend some time in prison, but he was over-sentenced, and the treatment that he received in prison was hurt him.
So I'm obviously not in a position to know about his particular circumstances. I do think there is a different problem here in addition to the issue of compensating the wrongfully convicted, which is that we do, in fact, use prison for certain kinds of offenses for which we shouldn't. For instance, we have several hundred thousand people in prison right now, often for very long sentences for nonviolent drug offenses, usually for selling relatively small amounts of drugs. I actually think we should abolish the war on drugs entirely, but even if you don't go as far as that, one should ask whether it's really a good idea to put small-time drug dealers or users in prison for 5, 10, or 15 years at a time, which is extremely expensive to taxpayers. It's extremely damaging to the economy. And realistically, when these people reenter society after coming out of prison, in many cases it's difficult or impossible for them to put together any kind of normal life, which, of course, further exacerbates not only the harm to them, but also the harm to the communities where they live. So this is not the same problem as compensating the innocent. Most of these people in prison in the war on drugs really did sell illegal drugs, so there are some who are innocent. But even if somebody really has sold some drug that we disapprove of, we should ask whether it's actually a good idea to put them in prison for as long as we do in many cases.
How about his thought that maybe there should be, you know, federal programs or federal standards so there's not a patchwork of different laws in different states?
So I have some degree of skepticism on that, in that it's not clear to me whether the federal government has any better incentives to address this problem than the individual states do. Certainly the federal government in all these years has not, in fact, done very much to incentivize the state to deal more effectively with wrongful convictions. He suggested maybe the federal government would have more money, maybe, but the federal government has been running enormous deficits over the last few years. And as a practical matter, cases where you can prove that somebody was innocent who was incarcerated are probably a relatively small percentage of the total number of people in prison. The issue is not that the states, you know, would suffer serious fiscal harm if they compensated these people. The issue is that there is very little political incentive in many states to address the problem. Most of the public isn't aware of it, and most of the people involved are poor and have very little political influence.
Our next caller is Randy in Madison. Hello, Randy.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you? What do you think of this?
I think people that are wrongfully convicted should get compensation. If they've been in prison longer than they should have been, it should be higher. And on top of that, I think once they get out of prison, the state should have the obligation both to train the individual, help look for housing for them, different things like that. They help them get on their feet. Yes, the state has the obligation.
Yeah, and didn't you, Randy, think that perhaps the compensation should depend in part on the crime, the one they did not commit?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
and I have one more thing.
Okay.
It needs to go to a nonpartisan commission of some kind, because the far right, unfortunately, very much so, either doesn't want to, will not compensate, or not very much money.
Well, I guess that's that brings up the point. How should the compensation be determined, Professor Soman? Not just a formula, but who decides if somebody should get the money or not?
So, yes, there's really two separate issues here. One is the procedure for determining whether you should be exonerated. The second is, if you are exonerated, the procedure for determining how much money you should get. On the second, as we talked earlier, it would be reasonable to have some amount for foregone income plus a significant amount for the pain and suffering inflicted by being incarcerated yourself. I don't think it should really depend on the crime that you are convicted for, but rather on the length of time that you spent in prison. If you are, in fact, innocent and you spent 5 years in prison, it shouldn't matter whether you spent 5 years in prison because you were wrongfully convicted for a drug conviction or because you were wrongfully convicted for something else. Either way, it's still 5 years in prison. On the procedure for exoneration itself, it's a difficult question. Usually, in most states, the procedure is actually extremely difficult to get through. And, you know, I think there is an argument for making them somewhat easier, but obviously you also wouldn't want to make it too easy in that there is some benefit to having finality in the criminal justice system. So I think that's a tough question that I don't fully have all the necessary expertise to address what should be the procedure for getting yourself exonerated in the first place. But if you are exonerated, then I think there's an overwhelmingly strong case for giving you compensation that's at least reasonably equivalent to the actual suffering that you've gone through, as opposed to either completely non-existent or obviously inadequate.
Aren't most of the exonerations before someone is released from prison for a wrongful conviction, isn't that determined already by usually DNA evidence?
So it's true. Many of these cases are based on DNA evidence, but the difficult procedural questions are the extent to which people can get access to the DNA evidence, how much evidence they need to bring it before a judge or some other official that can decide to exonerate them, and so forth. As a practical matter, most of these people who have been convicted, whether innocent or not, have very few resources, and so it's difficult for them to get somebody after they've been convicted to take up their case and continue to investigate it, unless they either happen to be relatively affluent or some advocacy organization like the Innocence Project or others takes up their case.
Yeah. And I would imagine that even if someone is exonerated through DNA evidence or something else, that once they apply for a job, even that's going to, it's going to hurt them that they spent 25 years in prison for, even if it was for a crime they didn't commit.
Yeah, so that raised a good issue in that if you don't get exonerated, in addition to the fact that you've lost a lot of time, you still have a criminal conviction on your record. And most employers, quite understandably, are suspicious of people who have criminal convictions on their record. If you do get exonerated, I think that goes away, and that's very important. It is, of course, true nonetheless that if you spent a lot of time in prison, it may be difficult to reintegrate into the workforce because, such skills as you have may have atrophied, and also prison life in many cases is very different from life in the real world, so it can be hard to get acclimated. This may be one of those things where even if you do get a reasonably adequate amount of compensation, maybe nothing can really fully and completely compensate you. There are still going to be some problems that you have in your life that resulted from your spending time in prison, but the best should not be the enemy of the good. The fact that we can't make the individual completely whole in every conceivable respect doesn't mean that we shouldn't at least do what we can.
We are talking about compensating the wrongly convicted, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on this. Do you think that every state should compensate someone who has been wrongly imprisoned for a crime they did not commit? How much should that person be paid? Where should that money come from? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is making the case for compensating wrongly imprisoned people. And he is Ilya Soman, a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about compensating the wrongfully convicted and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Wisconsin currently caps total compensation for someone who was wrongfully imprisoned at $25,000 total. There is some talk about raising that amount. Neighboring states, including Illinois and Minnesota, offer nothing. But in Minnesota, there is legislation also being introduced to offer some compensation for the wrongfully convicted. Looked around and didn't see anything for Illinois. And the situation in Illinois is one of the reasons we're talking about this issue. There was an article recently in the Chicago Tribune talking about all the problems that wrongfully convicted people in Illinois are facing. And our guest wrote another piece saying that these people deserve compensation. Ilya Soman is a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law. And our next caller is Joe in Milwaukee. Hello, Joe.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. As the old adage goes, you know, justice delayed is justice denied. And I guess I was shocked when, you know, when the topic was introduced, because it seems like just basic, obviously social justice, but common sense that if someone's been wrongfully convicted, and I think there must be, heavens knows how many tens of thousands of people this has happened to before DNA, because DNA seems to be the major tool that's now used to prove beyond a doubt that someone is innocent, but that in itself is, as I say, it just seems common sense. So that I was surprised, since I thought Minnesota a fairly progressive state, that they had zero. And as I said again, I guess it's catching up with this whole justice system that, as I said again, how many people have suffered the consequences of wrongful imprisonment because of the lack of DNA. My question is, I think, you know, so much of what we do in this country seems like reinventing the wheel. Healthcare is one clear example. In other words, what do other countries do and have been doing for many, many years, and we're still struggling to try to figure out how to resolve the problem. And I'm wondering if your guest knows about, what's done in other countries, because obviously, this is a situation that's not unique to the United States.
Yeah, what's happening elsewhere, Professor Soman?
So that's a good question to which I wish I knew more about the answer. My understanding is that there's variation abroad, just as there is in the United States. But I haven't really looked in any kind of systematic way on the data on what's done. But there is a lot of academic literature on how to compensate people for various kinds of harms. Much of it is about people who are victims of crimes or of torts and the like. At the very least, it's reasonable in such cases to compensate for some combination of lost income and pain and suffering, and we can apply that same formula here. It is true, as the caller says, that this issue has become more significant in the last 25 years because with the introduction of modern DNA evidence, we now have more proof than we ever did in the past of particular cases where people are wrongfully convicted. Realistically, we may not be able to ever account for all such cases, in part because of how many people we imprison and punish. And in that respect, unfortunately, the U.S. is not completely unique, but it's worse than most other liberal democratic nations where we imprison a much larger proportion of our population than they do, in many cases for nonviolent drug offenses. And as I said earlier in the interview, I think that's another thing that we should reassess, that we should really ask ourselves, should we have a war on drugs at all? And even if the answer to that question is yes, should we really have one that imprisoned such an enormous number of people, some 300,000 or 400,000 or more for nonviolent drug offenses alone as of right now. So we should really ask ourselves whether that's something we want to do, particularly given that when we talk about people who are exonerated, the overwhelming majority of them are people exonerated for crimes like rape and murder, very serious crimes. I doubt that's because the criminal justice system is vastly more careful about small-scale drug convictions than they are about rape and murder convictions. It's because rape and murder convictions are more likely to attract advocacy groups and other people who will try to re-examine the evidence later. So that suggests that we probably do have a substantial number of people in prison for lesser offenses, including drug offenses, who didn't commit them, but we may never know exactly who they are because in almost all such cases, there's not really anybody out there trying to reinvestigate the case to see if there was some sort of error made.
Interesting point from Ken in Green Bay, who wanted to point out that it is a cap of $25,000 in Wisconsin, which we've been mentioning. But he says if someone spends 3 years in prison wrongfully, for example, then it's only $15,000 that that person gets. So apparently, and I didn't check this, but apparently it's $5,000 a year, which does sound rather small.
So I'd have to, I don't have the text of the Wisconsin law in front of me right now. It could be the case, as in some states, that the $25,000 includes some compensation for attorney's fees and the like, and that there's a separate and lower cap for compensation for years in prison alone. But whether it's $15,000 or $25,000, it seems to me that either amount is insufficient unless the person has only spent perhaps just a few months in prison.
Well, Chuck and Sarone has been waiting. We're short on time, Chuck. I'm sorry, but what point did you want to make?
Well, if you read the book Conversations with Crystal, the woman who fell off the bridge, she, Crystal Manning and her fiance, Michael Stoner, were on the bridge over in Minneapolis when it was collapsed. But Michael Stoner was railroaded into prison in Washburn County. That's why she wrote the book, and she shows very clearly how they went about doing it. And it involved
Chuck, I'm so sorry. You're going into too much detail. What is your...
No, well, I'm getting to my question. In particular, the district attorneys in this state have no oversight over them. None whatsoever. In a democracy, that's a king. That's a king right there. And the second thing is you got this plea bargaining system where the district attorney holds basically all the cards and can threaten you with ages in prison if you do not plea the way they want you to, and they don't even have to have any evidence.
Chuck, thank you for your call, and I'm sorry we can't go into the issues you're bringing up in any detail at all. We only have less than 30 seconds. Professor Soman, do you see these laws changing across the nation?
I think there has been some slow incremental progress, and more attention has come to the issue than before, but there's still a long way to go.
Thank you so much for being with us. Ilya Soman is a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law, author of Democracy and Political Ignorance, Why Smaller Government is Smarter. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.